Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. I'm your host, Benji, and my guest on the show today is Isaac Barlow. He's the founder of BusyBusy, the industry-leading time tracking app for construction and trades. He's the managing partner of TechRidge, a 180-acre mixed-use development for tech businesses in St. George, Utah. And before all this, he ran an excavations company. So this is like a really rare combo of hands-on trades experience and technology creation. Today's conversation is about how time tracking creates a performance culture built on business intelligence, why field staff often resist adopting modern tech and how to change that, and how to create a modern data-obsessed organization in what is often considered an old-school industry. By the way, there is an accompanying PDF from BusyBusy available in the downloads. You can check that out using the link in the description. Without further ado, let's dive in with Isaac. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Isaac, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Benji.
Really excited to have you. This is actually a very, very interesting conversation we're going to have today about time on a philosophical level, time tracking on a more tactical level. And I think this is something that you know a lot about and have thought a lot about, given your story, the business you successfully built. So I think maybe a good jumping off point for this for our listeners, Isaac, is just tell everyone a little bit about you, but more specifically BusyBusy and its sort of founding story and the problem you were really trying to solve with this time tracking app.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background, I grew up literally in the trenches, started out in excavation, land development, worked in the trenches with my brothers. It was kind of a family-owned company. And then kind of worked up through the different process of, you know, working as pipe layer, job foreman, operators, you know, into estimating, project managers, et cetera, and owner. And so as I was going through that process, I'm kind of an analytical nerd. And especially as I took on more and more management of the company, I was always trying to look for data, you know, what kind of information could help me understand, like on these projects, how to understand when I'm winning and when I'm losing, and also the actions I could take. What are my actions I could take to win more? Hopefully not lose more. What are the actions or am I taking I need to avoid? And so in this process, I struggled just like everybody else trying to get data from the field to the office. It was quite a struggle. And usually the only way you got information was really people's time cards. And the reason they'd give it to you on their time cards is because that's how they get paid. And so if you want to know anything, you say, how many hours did you spend? What did you get done? Did you take your break? You know, were you injured? You know, whatever information you wanted, try to get in those time cards. And then, you know, I had a secretary that worked for me and she spent three quarters of a week. We had probably 40 guys. She spent three quarters of a week just trying to get those from the office to from the field to the office, trying to interpret them. Lots of times they were chicken scratch. You couldn't read them, messy, whatever the case is. So anyway, it was kind of a battle to get good data. And so I was always pushing for good data. And that led into the founding of BusyBusy. So BusyBusy is a time, it started out as a time tracking application. The reason we picked time was because what we were doing, you know, my vision for BusyBusy was I want to help contractors be more successful. If you look back into the history of construction and you just kind of do a market analysis, 70% of contractors that go into business for themselves fell within 7 years. That's as far back as the U.S. Census tracks data. It's a continual process. It doesn't seem to change. 100 people go into business, 7 years later, 30 of them will still be there. And so then I started, you know, kind of taking as a research project. I had my experience, but you know, you never know what's unique to you versus what everybody else is doing. So I did a lot of market studies. I spent a couple of years in studying the market, even hired a survey company to, you know, survey contractors coast to coast to see, you know, if everybody had the same problems I had, right? To try to figure it out. And then in my studies, what I found out is the majority of construction companies that failed, you know, immediately I'm trying to find out why did they fail? What was the reason? And it was, and the best information we could come up with came from bonding companies. because they want to decide whether they're going to give you a bond or not to do your job. And so they said the number one reason for failure is insufficient information to make profitable decisions, right? And so, and you know, that's kind of what I assumed. That's what I thought. And so I started getting into that, looking at all that data. You know, what is the information we need to make a good decision? And it's easy to illustrate. So for example, I was in the excavation industry. So I bid a job, and to make it simple, let's just say I'm doing 1,000 feet of sewer line and I'm installing 10 manholes, right? And maybe 10 laterals. Well, I go in and I bid that job. That's the first place that starts, right? I go bid the job. I collect my materials, data. That's pretty easy to know what it is. And then I start making assumptions on time. So I say, well, I'm going to have, you know, this machine and this machine and this machine and this guy and this guy and this guy. And I'm assuming that that's going to take them X amount of days, hours, however you want to count it, to get this sewer done, right? So the next question, you know, that's how the system works, right? If you're running what I would call the contractor accounting system, you estimate. Mm-hmm. You can call this the three E's, okay? You estimate, you execute, you do the job, and then you evaluate and say, hey, was I right? Like, are the people that worked on the project, did they use the machines I thought they'd use? Did they spend the time I thought they'd spend? Am I right? So I know next time if I should adjust my bid or not. And basically, that's where BusyBusy came in, is the hardest thing to track was that time, the time it took to execute the project. And so the data that comes from the time was our main motivation at BusyBusy, not so much, you know, a lot of people are pretty excited to find out, you know, if someone's clocking out when they're supposed to be and all that stuff, and that's fine. But we really were focused on the job site intelligence.
This whole time concept is incredibly fundamental to a contracting business, to any business. I think our companies are so human driven that this feels like an especially difficult thing. The other thing too is the nature in our businesses operate in physical reality. So you are working on a building, you are working in a ditch, you are working on a landscape, on a roof, versus in a software where like the tracking of the productivity is sort of baked into the interface, or it's a little bit easier in the digital world to measure and track time and productivity and all that stuff. It's harder in physical reality. And the, you know, just to go reiterate what you were just saying, you were, you know, we kind of started with these time cards, and then you have basically an office administrator, an office manager who fully 3/4 of their salary goes literally to just like collecting pieces of paper that have typos and scribbles and dirt marks to basically take it back and interpret it and then get it into a spreadsheet or a ledger so that we can figure out whether or not you said it well. Hey, was I right on this project or not? It's like what a colossal waste, right? I mean, no offense to that office manager. I'm sure for them at the time it was, you know, it was a job and it was a good thing to do and we needed it. But if we're thinking about just you know, where there's value add and where there isn't value add, spending a whole bunch of time chasing around you know, blue collar tradesy guys and women too, and saying, you know, how much time did you spend on this plumbing job versus that plumbing job, is not exactly a driver, let's be honest. So
nope, it's not.
When I think about time in the context of a contracting business, I like very, very simple analogies. Maybe it's because I'm a simple person. That could be the case. But I was thinking about this offline, Isaac, and I'll just set this up this way and you can expand on it. In the businesses that we all run, we make basically a 4-ingredient cake every single time. And sometimes it's not even that many ingredients. So whatever service you do, whether it's building custom homes, or it is mowing lawns, or it's painting buildings, you pretty much are always transacting on a combination of these four things. You have the time of your people, the hopefully well-organized time, well-orchestrated time of your people. That's one. You've got materials in some fashion, and hopefully there's some markup or some margin available on those materials. There's technical skills that your crew has that the customer does not. That's why they called you. And then in some cases, but not always, there's like a design component. There's a design component that we would add as well. You know, you could also make the case that your equipment, like your gear, the stuff you work with, we'd put that in there. But we're talking about a very simple cake. And the time part is like the flour. Like this is like the most abundant, the biggest resource in the recipe.
That's right.
And
that's
I don't know if people, I just don't know if people think about it in like the cleanest terms possible and like understand how fundamental to their profitability, to their enjoyment, to their customer satisfaction, the time component is. Do you see that as well? What are your thoughts on that whole analogy?
I like it and I agree with you. I don't think people think about it enough. You know, time's literally the one thing you can never get back, right? It's the most valuable thing in your entire life is your time. And so even your people, they're trading their time for you, you know, for dollars, right? And you're paying them dollars. And you're right. We are people business. And so even like the company I referenced where we have all this equipment and you know, you can say, oh, we have a lot of equipment costs and fuel and all this stuff. Well, their equipment is driven by people. And so the people, the time that they spend is really the driving factor of everything that happens. And whether that time is productive or not productive can really change your business from success to failure.
Productive versus not productive. I think that we can all learn something from like professional services. And I think of, you know, these like lawyer-y shows like Billable Hours or like Suits. Okay. Like those would be good things we all have a memory of. You know, the one thing that these big, you know, law firms with the very classic, like, you know, Lawson and Lundell and like Clarkson and, you know, whatever, like they all have the same kind of like one name and an ampersand and then another name. These firms are all deeply obsessed about billable hours. They want and That's they right. do an incredible job and they have systems for this, making sure that almost every minute of every day of every one of their lawyers is billed to the client. Okay.
That's
so
right.
If you work with a lawyer and we do, you will get an invoice for 0.1 of an hour, 1.1 of an hour. It's going to cost you this much. Please send the invoice to this address, whatever. Please send us a check.
That's right.
I think that there's something there that we can really learn from. And contractors, I think maybe they're focused on the quality of the work that gets done, making the customer happy. And those are really good, noble things. If you're really obsessed with profitability and productivity, I think we need to apply the same obsession with making those, the hours of our people billable.
That's right. Make them count. It's you're right. I think the data right now says about 1/3 or 35% of all time spent is spent on, in the construction industry, spent on, they call it non-revenue producing activities. So doing things that doesn't actually allow you to bill for it, right?
That sounds and low. They say 35% is spent on is not non-revenue driving.
Yep, non-revenue driving, non-billable.
Wow.
And you know that, and that is a little bit of an old stat. It could be higher now. Post-COVID, I know a lot of things have changed. But I think you're exactly right that if you looked at it more like the professional services to where that you teach your people, look, we need to make sure every time, every hour you spend is on something that we can bill for.
Yeah.
You know, what are we doing? And that way you start thinking about that and you get that kind of culture mindset where you say, are we generating money? Because, and if you teach the right culture, your people want you to make a lot of money. They should, because if you make a lot of money, they're more likely to get raises, bonuses, good, you know, swag, whatever the case is, right?
It's a very interesting question. I remember the first time I remember going back to this estimating this 3 E's thing. I remember the first time like doing an estimate and having a crew on a project. It was a small painting business and this was just an exterior repaint. And we had, I think it was maybe, it was like $4,500. So, you know, if reverse inflation going back like 7-8 years ago, this was, you know, it's a medium size. It's a nice, modest home in Kamloops, BC. And it was like wood siding and window frames. And I think if memory serves me, like I spent like the entire budget on just labor. Like it wasn't like just labor, didn't cover paint. Yep. And there certainly was no margin. And I remember sitting at the end of the job being like, what the hell? Like, how does this work? I've been given, this was like a student painting franchise. Yeah. So you're given a bit of like an estimating matrix and you kind of have, you know, production rates and it takes this long to paint a you know, a square foot of siding, and it takes this long to do this kind of window, this long to do this kind of door. And you sort of have a paint by numbers approach to estimating. And, you know, obviously over time, two things happen. One, you get better at estimating. Two, you get your crews more productive. But I remember that moment of just being like, holy crap, this is way harder than it looks on a spreadsheet. And what you learn is that over time, like you really have to pay careful attention to it. And what it was, just to finish out the painting example, but for those of you listening, you will know what I'm talking about. You can make this make sense in the context of your own business and the gear you use and the sites you're on. But the fundamental idea is like, it's the time going to grab the ladder. It's the time to set up the ladder. It's the time mixing paint. It's the time clean. Like none of those things are actually putting paint on the wall. And putting paint on the wall is what we get paid to do. And that's what I've estimated the thing on. So I just think that lens, and it's quite literally just like chop every all time spent in two categories. One is doing the thing that you're paid to do, and one is not. Yeah. Right. And so you need to be intellectually honest with yourself when you walk on a site and go, how much time is in this camp and how much time is in this camp? And for those of you that are not happy with your gross profit margin right now, I guarantee you, if you spent 3 hours on one of your job sites, you're going to be like, holy crap, there's a lot of non-revenue driving time going on.
Oh, yeah. I guarantee it too. Run into the hardware store. I forgot something. I forgot a tool. I forgot, you know, whatever, right? I mean, tons of things.
So let's talk a little bit about this, the old Peter Drucker quote, like what gets measured gets managed. To talk a little bit about, just talk a little bit about the features of Busy and how any good time tracking app, what should they be doing? What is it actually reporting? How does it work? And then we'll get into some maybe tactics on how to get this implemented.
Yeah. So Busy, and I know, I'm the founder of it, and I'm no longer the owner, as you know, it was sold off a year ago. So I can say this really honestly, Busy is the best out there. It really is. It's the best for the construction industry. There might be better timekeepers for other industries, but for the construction industry, it's the best because that's what it was customized for. It was designed for that. And so when I talk about what gets measured gets managed, what I like to use, just because I feel like it illustrates the example the best, is like basketball or football. When you don't have stats on people, you know, how exciting is it to play for your team? You know, if you didn't track stats on anything, when you start measuring things, like imagine being a coach, you know, I'm older, so I like Phil Jackson and the Bulls, you know, Michael Jordan. I mean, my team was the Utah Jazz, but I still liked Michael Jordan and the Bulls. But when you take these great coaches, how do they even coach their players? How do you be a coach? How do you tell people what they need to fix and what they need to work on and how they can become a better player that's worth more money, more valuable, if you don't measure anything? Like, you have to measure something so that you have that data. Like, how would the coach say, oh man, you know, you're shooting great from the 3-point line, but your free throws, man, those are lower than everybody else. Like, you really need to work on your free throws. And, you know, you're getting too many steals, people are taking the ball from you. Whatever the case is, if you don't have stats, you don't even know where your weaknesses and your strengths are and what to work on. And that's, you can apply that in the construction world, both on an individual level and a job site level. Which jobs am I winning on? Which jobs am I losing on? You know, like in the painting world, are two-tone paints killing me? I mean, it's just, I'm doing two-tone paints and it's not the same as a single tone, because I've got all this set up and takedown time and I've never considered that, you know, that it's not just paint on the wall, there's more to it. And so when you don't measure these things, you don't know how to coach your team as to how to be more successful. And that's the way I would interpret Peter Drucker's quote, is you've got to know what actions to take, you know?
So when you say, like, let's just take a second and linger on Busy for a second. Like, is it as a platform, I get into it and I'm in the user interface and I'm an owner and get some transparency into what's happening on my job site. Is it literally just a digitized version of the old paper cards, or can we see like where people spend time on different tasks? Can we see geography? Like give us a brief kind of overview of what type of visibility and what kind of texture, I think it's a good word, what kind of texture are we able to see within the app and the reporting there?
So first off, I'll tell you that like all technology, it's what you make of it, right? And what I mean by that is in Busy, there's power users. They use like 80% of our technology or more. And then there's a lot of people that are just using it 20% of what it can do. You know, they're bare bones using it, right? And we designed it that way because we wanted people to be able to use, like, you know, there's the way you did time cards on paper, which is what most people did. We wanted you to be able to step in slowly and be able to do it. But if you do immerse yourself in the technology, yes, it has geofencing, it has geolocations. You can see how much time people are spending on different job sites, different tasks, just about anything you want. Mm-hmm. And you can break that time down either on a very granular basis or a more bulk basis, you might say. Like when I advise people, I tell them, don't go so granular that your people hate it. You know, kind of work with the way you estimate and figure out what data you're trying to get. Because you can kind of go data crazy where you're like, well, I just want, you know, definitive data on every single thing. But basically, Busy pulls all that data together for you. It definitely, of course, tracks the time. It also gives prompts. It lets you schedule your people and they can just clock right into their schedule. So you can schedule and say, this is what your day is supposed to look like. Here's what you're supposed to do. You basically define or line out their course of the day and they can clock in and say, yeah, I did all that just like you said, or nope, things went a little different than you said. So Busy is a very extensive system, but it's also designed to be very simple. And so we get a lot of awards from people saying, oh, it's the easiest to use. Yeah, it is. It is the easiest to use. Because you can use it to whatever level you've decided to engage with your business and take it step at a time. It also pulls in your photos, all your documentation. So photos, PDFs, safety sign-offs, you name it. I mean, it really gives your crew this entire job site intelligence that allows you to really get the picture of what's going on. And it even generates automatic reports daily that tells you, you know, here's the time that was spent on the different tasks. Here's the photographs, here, work accomplished. You can put in there what was actually accomplished. You can actually set the stage for really good job tracking. And it'll tell you all those daily reports, let you know if anybody was injured, safety problems, even the weather on the job site. It just kind of pulls it all in.
How would you advise business owners to deal with pushback from their team, which I guarantee you they're going to get? I mean, like, oh, yeah. you've got Greg on the crew who like always claims to never have data, even though a 60 gig plan is like $15 a month. Now it's like, give me a break, Greg. You're killing me, buddy. I don't have minutes. Yep. Like, okay. So I'm joking. I've dealt with a lot of Gregs. There's always going to be this is just a change management question. And we could come up with funny examples of like any system, whether it's a CRM or if it's a new safety protocol or if it's a SOP for your sales and estimating team. Like people are generally going to grumble about anything new. That's something that you signed up for as a business owner, whether you realize it or not.
That's right.
When it comes to time tracking in particular, do you have any advice to, because you said it earlier, it's like, I don't know if you said this, but the term is garbage in, garbage out. Like you're only going to get out of it what you get into it. If you're getting very, very inputs because your team is a bunch of Gregs, what's your advice to kind of get people on the right side of this and using the app on their side the way that they need to?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll address that on kind of two different aspects. So one, there's a principle behind it. It's called the law of diffusion of innovation to do change management. So whenever you introduce any new idea into your company or in a marketplace, you're always going to have like your innovators, your early adopters, your late adopters, your laggards, right? So Greg, in your case, he's your laggard.
Yeah.
And so what you do, a lot of people will say, oh, you know what? I'm going to go start with Greg. And if Greg can use it, anybody can. And if Greg can't use it, I'm not using it, right? That's a terrible way to approach things. It's a terrible way to approach things because you won't advance in your business. So what you actually do is you find people in your business that they're the guys that are the early adopters of technology, innovators. They always have the new phones. They're always telling you about different apps. And you start with them because what happens is you kind of create this groundswell that overtakes your company. So it's like, well, no, I've got, you know, I don't know what your innovative guy is, Steve. You know, Steve's been tracking time. He's starting to do this. He's starting to do that. And he starts to show everybody, no, this is easy. I can do it. It's easier than paper time cards. And I start getting all the data. And you let that groundswell happen and go through your company. And you kind of work through the problems. And if it ends up being a data thing, you make that deal with your employees. Say, yeah, I would pay $10 a month for your data, whatever it is. You know, you make a deal. So it's a strict stipend. So you don't have that. Take away the excuses, right? And then you also promote, because this change management, you promote all the good reasons why you're doing it. Because yes, crap in, crap out. We mentioned earlier about collecting the time cards. The one thing I forgot to say is, when do you think, when you're calling a guy to collect time cards, when do you think he fills it out? Like 2 weeks later, right?
Yeah, whenever when payroll's due. Yeah, Friday like when night, both they're going to get
when
paid.
Payroll's due.
Yeah.
And at that time, he doesn't quite remember what time he spent on everything. And so he's really just guessing.
He's rounding up for sure. I think I was 10 hours there, 12 hours here. Yeah. Yeah.
He's rounding up, but he's also guessing how much time was spent on one task versus another. And so you're not really getting this data the way you want it. And that's why I say crap in, crap out. You start getting crappy data. Now, my second approach I would say is it's a cultural thing. As the leader in the culture, you have to start telling your company data is important to us. And in fact, accurate data is important to us. And so a lot of companies, what they'll do is they'll say, here's your budgets. And if you go over budget, man, you're a bad guy. You didn't do well. Like, you know, I'm going to punish you. And so what that'll do is it automatically make team members, they'll fill up one bucket of budget, then they'll move it to another and start filling up that bucket. So what you have to do is you have to say, we're a data first company. Like the first thing I want you to do is collect data. And then the second thing I want you to do is do your job. This is what I would do if I was founding a new company right now. I'd say, your first job is to collect data. Your second job is to do your job. We're a data first company. Because why? Because we want to learn. We want to grow. We want to advance. And we're going to advance step by step. And so as you collect this data, then you start saying, oh my gosh, I didn't realize two-tone paint. I knew two-tone paint was harder. I didn't realize it was that much harder. And I didn't realize all these things, right? And so you start getting this information in because you're a data-driven company and you start making it make changes. And so you really roll it out to your team as far as change, far more positive. And then the next piece of advice I'll give you, I don't know if you asked for it or not, but I would keep it simple up front. Mm-hmm. Take it step by step. Don't go in and say, you know what, man, I got to have all the data tomorrow. No, start off by getting your guys to just clock in and out using their phone if you're coming from paper. And then get to the point where they're selecting what job they're on, but you're not really breaking it down by task. You're just getting select what job they're on. You're starting to have them take photos once in a while, you know, but you know what I'm saying? You kind of move them into it gradually rather than just dumping it all on them very day. And Busy's designed to do that. Busy has a way, you know, and Busy, you can have them track time themselves. You can have their foreman track their time for them. You can have all kinds of different ways of doing it.
You've made it so that someone can dip their toe in and kind of wet their whistle, so to speak, and gain some comfort and confidence and go deeper and deeper. I want to make sure I heard you said a second ago. I don't know if this is a mantra of yours, but it's very catchy. You're like, we're a data first company, which means your first job is to collect data and your second job is to do your job.
It's 100% what I believe. I think if I was to go into any market doing any trade, and I have that mentality, I'm going to be more successful than the rest of the players in the market within 2 years because I will learn so much so fast.
Okay. I'm going to save that. We're going to parking lot. I want to come back to this whole idea of data first. Just to round out this sort of section of the conversation, you mentioned the Bulls and you mentioned kind of performance culture and a basketball analogy. Season should be starting any day now, by the way. Very exciting. As we record, this is late October. NBA season's about to get underway. I'd really like the Nuggets to win again, but that's for another podcast. Okay, so what I want, this is a big question, but does this kind of time tracking, I have a suspicion, and I've also just heard this firsthand, that there is a lot of fear from both business owners and employees that this is like, it's really going to hurt our culture. It's big brother-esque. You're kind of like spying on people. It's going to really mess up the vibes in the building. Can you just give us kind of a holistic answer on this question? Does tracking, time tracking, but I would say just like business intelligence in general, hurt or help a team's culture?
I think it helps no matter what. Now the help you get might be painful, right? You know, it's like when you start dieting and you realize, oh my gosh, I didn't realize potato chips were doing this much destruction to me, right? Once you start getting into it, it's going to help you overall, but you're going to start learning things about your culture and about your company. And you have to be willing to do that. And so, yes, I think it's a major help to your culture. I don't think you attract A players. You know, true A players do not work for companies that don't track them. Because A players, it's like the basketball analogy, they want to keep score. I want to know, like, if I'm doing good for you, I want to know that I'm doing good for you. I want to know that I'm efficient, that I'm effective, that I'm producing high, because next time you and I talk about a pay raise, man, I want to know that you're tracking my data. I don't want you to not know that, right? And so an A player, a top performing player, they want a data first company. They do. Even if they don't know it, they do. Because the minute you start scoring them, all of a sudden they'll find this great motivation, right? Because what happens a lot of times is, like, you know, you get this A player, they'll come on the job site and they're busting ass, right? They're working their butt off and doing great, but nobody else is. But you treat them all the same. So pretty soon they drop down to the level of everybody else because they know that you don't notice. Nobody notices. They bust their ass. They kick ass. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. And so when you start tracking things and you start saying, oh man, look, I noticed, man, you're outperforming my estimates. Like, you're getting this job done faster than I thought. You're doing this faster than I thought. I just want you to know that I'm seeing this. And, you know, I know, you know, our evaluation phase is coming up and I'm paying attention to these things. And you're going to see that person just perform. And, like, you know, like my Michael Jordan analogy or basketball, would you play for a team that didn't track stats? Like, if you're a good player, would you play for a team that didn't track your stats? You wouldn't even play for them. Now, the other side is people say, well, I'm worried about the big brother. Like, what if somebody sees that I just, you know, piss off half my day and I don't do a damn thing? Yeah, that could happen. Great. But if you're actually doing your job, you shouldn't be afraid of it. And the leadership, they shouldn't be using it as a bat, right? It shouldn't be like, oh man, you missed 5 minutes. Like, you know, you're in big trouble, right?
Yeah.
Leadership should use it more as data. Like, hey man, I can see that, you know, you're not producing at level you should be or whatever, right? You have this problem. What can we do to help you? What can we do to help you be more successful? And so you try to take players, let's say A, B, and C, and try to move C's up to B players, and you try to move B players up to A players, and you work with them. And if someone's just obstinate, they're not willing to work with you, and they're like, look, if you track me, I'm out of here, because, you know, whatever. A lot of times, to me, that's telling. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, I guess you don't really want transparency.
That's fine.
Probably isn't that I'm probably not the team you want to play for.
Yeah, no problem. That is a really, really interesting, there's very much a psychological underpinning here that I want to make sure is clear to the audience. You know, this whole theme and idea around gamification became very trendy in the business world in the last decade, wouldn't you say? Like, I sort of feel like I started hearing about it in the last decade. And so, you know, what does that mean? Well, people go, well, you know, how do we make our workplace more like a video game? Because kids love video games and then they'll work hard like they play. It's like they kind of, I feel like they, you know, Business Insider writes an article about it, or Forbes writes an article about it, and people try to get a bit too cute with it, where it's like, well, you know what we'll do is we'll kind of like do these, like, we're going to do these like mini games, and we're going to do these like, we're going to like make these like little rewards for like hitting certain thresholds. And then we're going to have these like progress bars that are going to show up on the CRM so people can see like how much further, like, I'm like, we have made these mistakes at BT. Like, I'm saying I can own this. Like, we've literally sort of like fallen for that, I think, kind of too cute version of it. It's like, you know, what's a really great way to gamify things? Put up a freaking scoreboard in the office for your top salespeople.
That's right.
Like, that's it. Right. Like, you want people to work harder, like, ditch the cute little, like, well, if you sell this much, you get this prize. And then if you do this much, you get this prize. Like, just put a scoreboard. And if you want to look at the, going back to the video game things, the ones that are the people are the most obsessed with, it's like Call of Duty and World of Warcraft. And you know why? Because they have leaderboards that people are obsessed with. It's not because they get a cool new character if they win something. It's because of the keeping score part. And I just think this whole, to tie this, to put a bow on this, the leaderboard can show stats on any number of metrics. It could be sales volume, it could be whatever. But the fundamental idea here is about transparency. And when it comes to time, a time tracker is the fastest way to get transparent.
That's exactly right.
So anyway, that's my rant.
Exactly right.
I'd asked you offline for like three tips for leaders to help get their employees starting to think in these like revenue driving versus non-revenue driving terms. In other words, get them sort of thinking more like owners. And you gave me three, I'll feed them back to you. Setting clear expectations, line out their work properly, and then reward them for good data. Don't punish for missing budgets, but just reward them for good data. So I'll let you unpack those three in whatever order you want.
Sure. Yeah, setting clear expectations as, you know, again, I try to build my business around people who want to win, right? An A player, they want to win. At the end of the day, that's what they want. And so setting clear expectations is you really need to say to that, you really need to set up in your training. A lot of us, we don't spend enough time training. But in our training, we need to say, here's what you doing a good job looks like to me. Like this is what it looks like, right? Clear expectations. Here is what success looks like. You've got to line that out and be clear about it. And then when you do that, so some, you know, you take someone, they're excited, they want to be successful. And then you hand them a job and you're like, yeah, go paint this house, right? Go paint this house. They get there and they're like, you know, it's got this specialty trim, it's got this and this. And so, and they're not quite sure what the hell to do. And so your second thing is you've got to line them out. And I call it lining out, but basically set up the job, do a clear transfer of here's what the expectations of this job are. Here's what you're supposed to be doing. Here's the materials and supplies you're going to need, or maybe I've got them for you. But a lot of that waste of time is spent by someone trying to figure out what to do. And they don't want to disappoint you. They feel like maybe they're supposed to know something that they don't really know. And so they don't necessarily want to communicate. And so you've got to be really clear about lining this out for them. Like, here's how this job is supposed to function, right? Including who they're supposed to communicate with, if it's an owner or a general contractor. Then the third thing is you've got to be like, look, I bid this job to get done in this amount of time. Okay. That's what I think is the case. You're a fantastic worker. I'm hoping you can beat that amount of time. But the most important thing to me is that I know what time it takes. And that's what I want to know the most. I need, and you know, data first. Again, I'm not going to beat you over the head for this budget, but you know, perform your best so that I see whether I'm right, whether we can get more jobs, whether I'm wrong. And, you know, and then what I like to do is I like to figure out a way to give them some sort of incentive back. Like, you know, if you beat this budget, you know, it's great. It's fantastic. And we probably got, you know, some little fun prize thing, whatever, right? I like to give incentives to where that I just make it fun for people. Just give them challenges. Most people like challenges.
So set clear expectations, line out the work properly, and then reward them for bringing you data. Don't punish them for being over budget. I really, really love those points. Especially, that's right. I think the lining out the work properly is the one that stands out to me the most, maybe, because there's a saying in marketing, but I think it applies to operations too, which is if you confuse, you lose. And that's it's from Donald Miller, who's the story brand guy. Love him and all of his work, as our listeners know. But he's talking about brand messaging. He's like, when you talk about what your business does to the public from stage and your website, it's got to be really freaking simple. Like if a 5-year-old can't understand it, you're screwed.
Oh, I love it.
And so he's very much about sort of like a simple communications and branding type guy. But the same thing happens on a job site. It's like, hey man, from in the morning, I want you doing this. And then there's like a 2-hour section in the middle where I want you doing this. And then the afternoon, it's doing this. If someone, every minute that someone has to spend figuring out what to do next is time not spent doing what they need to do next. And I know that's obvious, but it is worth repeating. Like you want to make this incredible. People aren't robots. I get that. But the more you can be robotic in like where their effort gets put, the better. So yep.
Over communicate, because if they're wondering about what to do, they're not making money.
Yeah.
They're not making you money.
Yeah. 100%. By the way, listeners, there is a really, really great job costing handout from Busy Busy, and it talks all about tracking labor and how labor fits into your overall job costing. It's kind of a walkthrough PDF that we're going to make available in the downloads. There is a link on the description that you can click on to access that. And why don't we mention it now? There's a promo from you guys too.
Yeah, that's right. And for Contractor Evolution listeners, they sign up for Busy Busy, they get an additional 3 months of credit when they purchase a year. So they'll get 3 months free basically on their first purchase of Busy Busy.
Okay.
And that's a pretty big discount. That's like a 25% discount, 3 months of the year.
Track your time, people. Check out Busy Busy. Links for both of those will be in below this in the show notes. I want to round out this conversation and even like so we've really been focused on time tracking. I want to like take a step back even and talk about this idea of business intelligence more broadly. You know, we're a data first company, like just this whole theme. I think that there's something important here. And you're a very interesting person to talk to about this because you are a SaaS founder. So you understand data and tech on a deep level. It sounds like you've also spent a decent amount of time like in an excavator digging holes and developing properties. So it's like you don't often get people who can bridge both worlds very effectively. So I want to talk about business intelligence for trades and construction more generally here. And I thought it'd be useful just to maybe do a quick, I like definition. So I'm going to define this for the audience. Guys, this is the GPT definition. Business intelligence refers to the strategies, technologies, and tools used by organizations to collect, analyze, and present business data. The goal of business intelligence is to help business leaders make more informed decisions by transforming raw data into actionable insights. That might be the most important sentence of the whole thing. BI systems typically include functions like data mining, process analysis, performance benchmarking, and descriptive analytics. So here is what I see.
That's why we founded Busy.
Here's what I see happen a lot, Isaac, is like people skip. Like they don't think about this in a very first principles way. They just kind of skip to like the CRM of the day. And they're like, no. I have AccuLinks, or I have JobNimbus, or I've got BuilderTrends. So like we have business intelligence. It's like you have a business intelligence tool, and that's awesome. That's better than nothing. But I want to almost like take a big step back and ask you this question. It's like before softwares, before tools, before doing product demos with anyone, how should business owners think about business intelligence in their own companies? Like what's important and what isn't?
Great. And so it's principle wise, right? Before software, before anything.
Yes.
It goes back to that, the three E's I told you. You know, estimate, execute, and evaluate. That evaluation, if I can't do that evaluation, right? Because when I estimate, I have a set of resources that I'm planning, time, et cetera, materials. If I can't go out after that job and line up next to it and say, this is what actually happened. Here's my estimates, here's my actuals, and compare them and say, what did I learn? That is your base level of business intelligence. That's the base level of where you win or lose in the business, because you're estimating jobs, you're performing the jobs, and then you're coming back and saying, okay, was I right? Was I wrong? Did I use the right resources, right people, right time? You know, just like you said, where you spent up the $4,500 and you hadn't even paid for your materials yet. You have to learn how to win the game. Mm-hmm. And business intelligence is all about, and I would call it job site intelligence. It's all about getting that data that lets you review your estimate and say, because the estimate is where you start, right? That's your sale. Review that estimate and say, did I win? Did I lose? And what components of my job did I win or lose at? Because sometimes I won in this category, I lost in this category. And all of that intelligence tells you how to make more actionable decisions, just like that definition said. Like say I'm winning on one category and losing on another. I'll use your two-tone just and forgive my ignorance in painting, right? But let's say overall I'm making 5% profit margin. I think I'm kicking ass, right? But in reality, I'm making 20% margin on single tone houses, and I'm losing 15% on two-tone houses, but I don't track the difference between them. So I just combined that and I say, I'm making 5%. So I get this opportunity to grow my business by three times, and it's a whole bunch of two-tone houses, right? And I say, yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to go do that. Completely bankrupts me because I had no idea that that's what was killing me. That's a lack of business intelligence.
There is a, like the way that I would, and you can use different terms for this, but the way that we would think about this at Breakthrough Academy is there is always a goal and an actual. So on the project level, there is a goal, your estimate, and there is an actual, what you actually did. In your strategic plan for the year, you're talking revenue goals, gross profit goals, net profit goals, there is a goal and there is an actual. And you are minding the gap. That's like literally your entire life is just spent,
that's right.
What did we say we wanted to do? What did we actually do? And so I really like clean, hygienic thinking. We can get into tools and fancy features later, but like fundamentally, what should business intelligence for a contractor do? It should help you make goals cleanly and track actuals cleanly. And then ideally overlay the two and see the gaps and go, okay, we should do more of this and less of that. We should do less of this and more of that, like that kind of stuff. So I just like to boil it down to absolute first principles. And I think before, like I said, before we get into, we can, because you can kind of get lost in feature blasting and what's trending and something has a really cool UX UI, so you kind of fall for it. It's like, no, does it do these two things or not? And if it doesn't, then you're wasting your time.
That's right. So, I think that's perfect.
Okay.
Two
really common mistakes that I see, Isaac, and I wonder if you have thoughts on this. Not enough data, too much data. So too much data is, and you see this with like real data nerds, they get really excited and it's like a spreadsheet for a spreadsheet, or it's like too many columns, too many rows. And there's, we have these at Breakthrough Academy. I'm sure we all do in your businesses. You're like, why is this here? This isn't like, I'm losing the signal for the noise. I'm actually like, I get that there's numbers in all these cells, but I'm not even clear on what this is telling me. So that's too much. And then too little is just literally stumbling around in a dark room being like, ooh, that's a sharp corner. Ooh, that's hot. I've burnt myself. Like, that's not good either. How would you encourage business owners when it comes to their business intelligence to figure out that right, that tightrope walk and get it balanced?
Well, the first definition I'd say is just that actionable word. You know, if you have data that's not actionable, yeah, it's either too little or too much, right? And so figuring out how to get to that actionable data is important. Second is take your journey into data first company slowly. You know, identify the first most important thing you want to know about your business. You know, you might want to know, you know, let's use time. Like, I want to know on average how many hours my guys spend in a week, right? Maybe that's all I want to know. Maybe I want to just want to know how much time to spend on regular time versus overtime. And take that point and then keep adding points to it and just take your next most important thing based on actionable decisions you want to make. Like if you said, well, I want to make this decision, but it would really help me if I knew this thing to make that decision, right? And so take those steps of actionable items one by one.
Some people are absolutely not born data nerds. They have gifts in other areas. I'd be one of those people. Like I can and do look at data, but it's not like I'm not gifted in that in the way that other people are. And I'm like quite aware, and that will bother people on my team. It's a weakness that I have to work on, but I have other gifts that I play well. And we've all kind of got our own individual package. There are a lot of contractors who are not necessarily data nerds who have absolutely found their way. They found a path through success, to success. What would be, how would you coach someone who isn't naturally wired this way, the way that you are, to become more data obsessed? And then maybe by extension, make their team more data obsessed too.
I apologize for using this analogy. I don't know what else to use, but I would start giving them a little bit of data at a time, kind of like a gateway drug. You know, like I got to get them addicted to data. And so I would give them a little bit of data and show them like, oh, look what happened. Look how you performed. Look at this. And start, you know, kind of showing them what they can learn from it, because everyone wants data. They might not know it, but they want it. Like, how many people want to drive down the road in a car with no mileage gauge or kilometer gauge, right? For Canada, like how? Like, do you want to drive down the road with no instruments?
No.
Nobody does. And it doesn't matter whether you like data or not. You want those instruments showing you whether you're doing what you're supposed to be doing in that vehicle. And that's the same way to look at your data for your job or for your business, is you just need some instruments to tell you some things. Maybe you don't need everything. Like, you know, your signal to noise. Maybe I don't need as many gauges as a pilot, right? But I need as few as a driver of an automobile so that I at least know I'm driving the right place, the right speed, you know, all those kind of things, right? Not blowing up my engine because my oil's out or whatever the case is. And so I would say you just start out slowly. You say, what's the most important little piece of data that I need? And there's some that you have to have, right? You have to pay people payroll. You've got to have enough data to know how much money to pay someone. And you just take little things and then add to it as you're trying to go through, what are the things I need to know about my business?
I think the gateway drug is kind of perfect for it. Like, you do, this is a good drug that we do want to get you addicted to. So we're going to spoon feed you a little bit, and hopefully 6 months from now, you're kind of fully addicted and using it yourself. It's kind of a catchy way of thinking about it. I love it. I think we can leave it at that today. I think we kind of covered all the stuff I wanted to. Isaac, this is like a really interesting conversation. I could go longer, but that's kind of a nice landing point. Where can people follow or connect with you? And then where can people check out Busy Busy?
Busy Busy, go onto their website, just busybusy.com, BUSYBUSY.com. Okay. And that's the best place to connect and or to go check out Busy Busy. And as far as connecting with me, what I do now is land development. So it's techridge.com is a website that shows land development that I do.
Okay, brother, we will link those below. I really appreciate the time and the thought and all the wisdom here. This has been a ton of fun. And thank you for the hat. I will mention this at the end. Busy Busy makes really great ball caps. I'm not wearing it today, but I should have been. Black with like the nice little rope. It's very fresh. If you can get the team to send me another one, I will wear it. Great hat game at Busy Busy. Check them out. Thanks, Isaac. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.